Hi, I'm Rachel Smith, and this is the Mad Tech Podcast, fast and furious news for the Mad Tech generation. Hello, everyone. Welcome to this week's edition of the Mad Tech Podcast. It's the 100th edition. I can't believe we've done 100 of these. And special treat for all of our listeners is the entire ExchangeWire team nearly giving everybody their highlights or their favourite moments of Mad Tech Podcast. That will be followed by our usual discussion of this week's news stories with my trusty team guests, Kieran O'Kane. Kieran?
Hello.
Ah, good. Excellent. Lindsay Rowntree over in Walthamstow. Hello.
Hi.
And to kick things off, we're going to get started with the rest of the team. Say hello, rest of the team.
Hello, rest of the team.
Hello, rest of the team.
Anne-Marie Sheedy, Director of Partnerships. Go on.
You and Lindsay with severe jet lag, shall I say, when you're out in Singapore talking to the lovely Rohan Kamra from Intel, where Lindsay was, as always, you know, not just involved, but being sound guy on this occasion as well, and finding it a little bit challenging with the logistics, shall we say. Is it table tennis sound that was going on, I think, Lindsay?
That is a good way of describing it, where he was holding the microphone and we sat either side of him stupidly and he kept turning to look at us and kept the microphone in place and the sound was just going like darting from high to low. And I said about five times of the podcast, Rohan, just what a quick reminder, could you just keep make sure that you either sit still or move your microphone with you? And he's like, yes, I'm sorry, Lindsay, of course. And the same thing would happen. I was like, just forget it. And I dropped the sound box as well and created a massive clunk. And oh, yeah, it wasn't the best, my best.
I think that was shortly followed by, I thought what you were going to say there, AMS, was letter post door slots.
Well, it was actually. That was second on the list with the lovely Chris Stevenson from PhD Media, whereby, again, you've got, you know, the excuse of being incredibly tired, but you forgetting what a letterbox was and calling it a post slot or something that you post that slot that things go through.
An ad tech luminary came up to me at Demexco last year and said, who I hadn't met in person, and said, oh, hi, Rachel, lovely to meet you in person. I just want to say I really enjoyed the Mad Tech podcast episode where you talked about the letter post door slots. Great.
Segue into my third and final story, which is to Mexico and where I had the privilege of being sound gal with the wonderful Permutive in News UK. We had Joe Root and Oliver Williams, and they had a fantastic stand. But there was quite a lot of background noise in the midst of one of the largest exhibitions for our industry. So that was particularly challenging for me. I was a little bit jaded myself. I can't put it completely down to jet lag. But yeah, that was my kind of third and final fond moment of our podcast.
I mean, also, it's important to note that that was the morning after the night of the at least 1,000 people turning up to Barney Vallely's, right? The photograph that Kieran posted on LinkedIn in the week.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a pretty big night. And, and actually, if I think back to that moment, Amos, I do, yeah, that was very stressful for you, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
was that the hangover episode?
If you want to call it that, Rodney.
So on the topic of sound engineering, Rodney, have you got a favourite moment for us?
I've been really put on the spot with like 5 minutes to think up something. So,
and so many moments to choose from, right?
The moments are usually when I get the files back from when you guys have been away and worrying how bad the recording's going to be. Rodney, can you
Rodney, that Demexco one was a big one, right? Because you big messaged one. Me going, this
are you
is...
sure you want to put this out?
Yeah.
So that one sticks out in my mind most, and Rachel getting the guest names wrong.
Okay, you're going to have to help me out here, Lindsay. Max Schrems versus Mark Shrooms. I called him Mark Shrooms, didn't he? He wasn't a guest. He wasn't a guest. But I called him Mark Shrooms, and actually his name is Max Schrems, isn't it?
It is Max Schrems. And when you said it, I was like, no, really? Do I say something? Do I just leave that?
Matt Broughton, previous ExchangeWire editor, now our gaming economy editor. Please share your favourite Mad Tech podcast moment with us.
So it was undoubtedly the Christmas special from last year, where, again, there are a little bit of jet-lagged emotions going on. You know, we were recording it in the office. And I was listening to the first 5 minutes of it just now, and it started off as a complete and utter shambles and carried on that way. Kieran was dismantling boxes. I was cracking out puns I'd be working on for weeks. And, you know, there was Rachel in there trying to keep some semblance of control, and ultimately it wasn't working. And then as the episode went on, it kind of summed up what the Mad Tech podcast is, because it was basically Rachel and Lindsay coming up with some cracking insights into what was going on in the industry over the course of the year. And then in the background, there was Kieran dismantling a sandwich, dropping half of it on the floor and eating it rather messily. And of course, it was finished off with Dwayne the Christmas tree having a good old sing-song.
Grainne Reed, our marketing exec, otherwise known as G, the one and only G.
So I've got two. One is, well, and both are from kind of behind the scenes, I suppose. One is a highlight and one may not be a highlight for Rachel. After her hours of work going into writing like podcast notes on all the stories, spending hours doing it, and then realizing that the notes have somehow disappeared. Yeah. And they just were deleted, I'm guessing. And you think you spend hours then trying to rewrite them, find the story links and everything. So that was one behind the scene low light. And then the other was a highlight from, again, Rachel, trying to mirror the sound quality that we'd get in the office studio. And then trying to do the same thing from home, finding that it wasn't working out quite so well. And resorting to trying to record under the duvet, which I'm sure got a mention actually in one of the podcasts as well.
It sure did. And the most embarrassing thing about that though, G, is that I've since discovered that actually it wasn't the duvet that made the difference. It was these headphones and this microphone that I'm using now sitting in my kitchen, not under the duvet. Grace Dillon, our ExchangeWire editor, new to ExchangeWire and started working for us at the start of the pandemic. Weird times, but you've somehow managed to get the measure of what a bunch of lunatics we are. Tell us what your favourite Mad Tech podcast moment's been.
I mean, it's a bit of a weak job market at the moment, so, you know, I didn't have much of a choice.
Yep, nice one.
My favourite moment actually is from just a couple of weeks ago with the podcast with Scott Messer, in which he compared Kieran to William Wallace from Braveheart, which I thought was particularly fitting because of some of the motivational speeches we've had in our some of our group calls, which have been incredibly helpful, especially during lockdown and social isolation. They've been incredibly inspiring, but also because of the wonderful image it conjures of what Kieran would do if confronted with the heads of Google, Facebook, etc.
This ties in well, though, with the fact that Kieran is just a massive fan of the film Braveheart, because it's been on more than one occasion that we've been out for, say, team drinks, and he's gone, right, I'm going home now. I'm going to go home, I'm going to get a takeaway, and I'm going to watch Braveheart. And then the next morning, that's on more than one occasion, the next day you say, did you watch Braveheart last night? You go, yeah, I watched it three times. I mean, I've got so many. I'm just going to go little tiny moments. The one was when we had one of our early guests was Amir Malik, of Accenture fame, of general ad tech fame, introduced himself as Amir Tracksuit Malik.
Yeah.
And we were like, what? Because he goes around the office at Accenture with everyone wearing suits, I imagine, wearing a tracksuit or wearing just like the worst, like, lounge clothes. One of my toughest moments moderating Kieran, who we all know is a challenge, was when we had the wonderful Will King from the Media Trust join us, and the multiple stories kind of crossed over into Google territory, and Kieran went on his most epic Google rant that I think he's ever gone on in a podcast, and it was so bad. It was the one time we had to actually edit some of it out because it just went so far. I mean, we all know what Kieran's like when it comes to Google, but this one was extreme. One of the favourite of mine was the one that you, Rachel, and Kieran recorded with Kevin Flood.
Oh.
Just had an argument beforehand.
You've stolen one of my favourite moments, Lindsay.
Introduced him as our mouthy, opinionated CEO. and you went, you just shouted at me, Kieran.
I also feel, since this was going to be one of my favourite moments, so I'm going to come in on this one here, Lindsay. From memory, I need to listen to it again, but I have a feeling that it started off with a classic Kieran and Rachel greeting moment where we accidentally slide into moments of Seinfeld, if anyone's familiar with Seinfeld, where Seinfeld and, what was his name?
Newman.
Newman used to have a little love-hate relationship. They'd walk in the room and say, hello, Seinfeld, hello, Newman. Kieran and I do that a lot. So it was like, yes, welcome to the Mad Tech podcast. Here's our mouthy, opinionated CEO, Kieran. Hello, Kieran. A bit like, hello, Bang Rachel. On. Yeah. And then I had to confess that we'd had a massive argument. Poor Kevin was just sat there going, what the hell is going on? How have I wound up recording a podcast with these two lunatics?
Obviously, I had to. I agree with the ones that Anne-Marie said about Rowan Camara and Chris Stevenson in Singapore. I love a lot of our remote ones, actually. Like, you know, even just kind of being able to be, when we were in Stockholm earlier this year with Jan Montreal, in a legitimate podcast studio, we felt very kind of special important that day.
Yeah.
The one that we did after ATS Madrid with Dennis Buckheim from IAB Tech Lab, sitting on a sofa backstage, and people kept coming in telling us to get out because they were trying to close down the venue, and we were going,
dismantling.
Five more minutes, all while trying to still record this podcast. I mean, some of the behind the scenes stuff for us is ridiculous. And again, I have to also call out the Christmas podcast with Kieran had peanut butter in his hair, and halfway through, Hugh, our former Fast Growth Brands editor, walks in and hands him a ham, mustard and cheese sandwich, which he proceeds to drop on the floor.
But eat anyway. Kieran.
I don't really have any. It just, 100 podcasts, it's just one rant basically merging into another. It's just a series of rants. There's no real memories. All of those are pretty good. The tracks at Malaga was, I just reflected that, was quite funny. But yeah, they're all just literally just anti-Facebook, Google, Amazon rants, really.
So I've got one to add, because the Kevin Flood from Powerlinks post Kieran and I shouting at each other, or Kieran shouting at me in the office, was one of my faves too. But the other one I'd add to it is the podcast with Barry Adams from iPon Web, the first 10 minutes of which was utter hilarity of reminiscing about moments in Singapore that unfortunately never made it to the final version because they were not for public consumption, very unfortunately. And anyone that knows Kieran and anyone that knows Barry and anyone that knows the lethal combination of the two of them together and anyone that's been to any of the ATS events we've run in Singapore will know what I'm referring to. Suffice to say, we've still got that footage somewhere. So maybe one day when Kieran and Barry are safely out of the ad tech industry, we might release it for the world to enjoy. News stories of the week. Quick fire. We've only got two because we've taken up a big chunk of time reminiscing. First news story.
Why did Rodney leave?
No, he's not left.
No, he
went.
I'm still here.
I've just taken the camera off.
Jesus, Lindsay. 100 episodes and you still haven't worked out how the tech side of it works.
Okay. Hi, yeah. Andy.
Yeah. Anyway, so luckily Sound Guy's still involved. So first news story of the week is that Disney, so you even get that name wrong. Bloody hell. Mark Shrooms. Disney has sold off ad tech company Truex, which they'd absorbed as part of their acquisition of 21st Century Fox last year, to Gimbal.
Does anybody else find that a really funny name, though? It just doesn't sound right.
Totally do. It's a bit sort of gimp.
Gimp, exactly.
Gimp-like.
Gimbal. And they're a subsidiary of...
Bring out the gimp.
They're a subsidiary of Payday, right? I'm assuming, yeah, I'm assuming that's how I pronounce the parent company, Payday. Yeah. Anyway, okay, right. Gimbal. Oh, they're going to love us for this. They're a location data tech company. So they're the acquirers of Truex. Financial details haven't been disclosed, but the deal is thought to be worth less than $100 million. Bargain in the world of ad tech. Truex is known for effectively reward video in a TV environment, where the user interacts with an ad in exchange for fewer adverts or no adverts at all. Gimbal is thought to be interested in Truex to help reduce fraud in addressable TV inventory, and also to obviously overlay their location-based targeting capabilities to offer better targeting and more less fraudulent inventory to buyers. So I'm interested to hear what you guys think of this deal. Has Gimbal bagged a bargain here? Lindsay?
I think that in a world where CTV is such a massively growing market, I'm surprised that Truex was bought for what is arguably a very low price by a location company. I would have expected it to be snapped up by somebody more playing in the CTV game than they are. And given that Fox bought Gimbal for $200 million in 2014, back when CTV was still fairly nascent compared to where it is now in 2020, I'm really surprised at the price it's gone for. And I'm interested to see how Gimbal will use it. They say they want to use it for because they've got kind of the TV app network, the TV app contact, so that they can use it to expand into that area. So I guess that makes sense. And look at it from an addressable TV perspective, so to be able to target certain ads in certain areas at a household level. You know, if you're from the UK, a bit like what's obviously Sky do with their adjustable TV offering as well. And also because Truex are good at detecting fraud, and fraud in CTV is growing as CTV grows, as does fraud, as you would expect. And Truex apparently are very, very good at being able to identify if somebody watching an ad is human or not. So yeah. I guess it makes sense. And I guess if Gimbal are trying to get into the TV space, it does make sense. But I'm just surprised there weren't more takers for it. And I'm kind of surprised, obviously, Disney viewed it as a non-core asset. I kind of feel like they could have thought about doing something more with it.
Yeah, well, that was the first thing that struck me, is why didn't they want it for themselves? I mean, even if they didn't feel that they could necessarily make an enormous amount of value out of it right now, why not hold on to it since... What's going on there, Lindsay? Are you getting bitten by the dog?
He's digging again. He's digging to Australia again.
Oh, I think it's just the sound of my voice. It's podcast Thursdays. So why didn't they make use of it themselves? And even if they couldn't make immediate use of it, why didn't they hang on to it? Because, you know, in the world of Disney, I'm not sure that less than 100 million is that much of a great price tag for them, right? I don't know. Kira? Why bother? Kira?
I just think this whole thing's bizarre. I didn't even know Disney had an ad tech business embedded inside it. I think this is probably from the acquisition it made.
It is.
So Truex was already part of Fox.
The most bizarre thing this week was Disney selling an ad tech company to a company called Gimbal. really kind of bizarre with this. Yeah, I mean, Lindsay's right. I'm surprised with the number. Is that a reflection of how soft the M&A market is for ad tech right now? Or is it because people are waiting to see what way, the wind would blow in terms of like cookies and all the rest of it? I don't know. A lot of the strategic buyers are seem to be flipping the other way and selling stuff. So we had Verizon now trying to flip Xandr, allegedly, because they want out of the ad tech business. Are we seeing a lot of people abandon the ad tech business? Or, I don't know, it's a very odd M&A deal, to be honest with you. I can see the logic of it, but there's bigger questions around it, whether or not this is just a sign that the market is a bit soft.
Yeah. What about the value of Truex as a tool, this idea of location-based, overlaying location-based information to try to work out who are the most sort of valuable viewers to be showing ads to in a kind of addressable environment?
Is this privacy first? I don't know what data they're using. I mean, is it all...
It's a good question. I don't know. There's been no detail.
That could probably... explain the low price because it's not buttoned up properly around privacy, possibly.
Yeah.
I don't know enough about the company or how it does stuff, but I imagine every time I hear location, alarm bells go off in my head because it is probably the dodgiest of all the targeting parameters in space. Like, so I'd be surprised if there isn't that behind it as well. So, let's see. Let's see if that's the case. But I don't know, it's a very strange deal.
Lindsay, any point of view on that, the value of what they've actually purchased here?
Yeah, I mean, I think that maybe Gimbal have got something that is because nobody else really wanted it, and maybe it was kind of all done a bit under the radar, that maybe Gimbal have got themselves a really good, really good offering here. And it's funny, Kieran saying, I had no idea Disney even owned an ad tech company. It's like, yeah, you're right. And did Disney even realize they owned an ad tech company? Was this all kind of done so under the radar? They weren't even sure what it was and if they could do anything with it. Mm. It certainly wasn't part of the original deal of the 21st Century Fox purchase going through. So maybe they just thought ad tech is not our bag, despite the fact that they own a lot of networks, they could probably do something with this. It feels like if they'd sat down and thought about it, they could have. Did they need the 100 million versus actually being able to sit down and go, how can we make use of this across our networks?
Mm. Well, it'll be really interesting to see, you know, what actually happens then, what Gimbal are able to do with Truex. And like you said, Kieran, if it will just disappear into a vortex because they maybe don't have the right permissions around the data that they're using, one to watch. Second news story, quite surprisingly, I have to say, Google, it's...
Kieran, Rachel, you can't... Kieran's already shaking his head. We haven't even started the story yet. He's already shaking his head.
There we go. Massive rant.
Yeah.
Right. It's a Google story, everybody. Cued in by the shake of head from Kieran that you can't see, but everyone can even hear it. They're so used to it. It's probably what starts Sebastian digging. He's like, holy shit, it's another Google rant.
Please, no more Google.
I'm out of here. So Google has been given the sort of speculative go-ahead for their acquisition of Fitbit, which was announced in November last year by the European Commission. So the European Commission initially wanted to block this acquisition on the basis of concerns around data privacy and market competition. But Google have provided some additional assurances in how they will run Fitbit once it's part of the Google family that appear to have appeased them, which is the bit that surprises me. So Google have said that they won't be using any Fitbit data for personalised advertising. That's got a caveat on it, though, for a 10-year period. So, you know, okay, so what, just for the first 10 years? And I mean, also, what does that say about... You know, I'm really interested in both of your perspectives on why Google want Fitbit, because, you know, clearly it's not for, in the first instance, it's not for running personalised advertising, if they're happy to agree to that. Anyway, and then the second thing is that they also agreed to allow other third parties access to Fitbit data as long as they've got permission from users. So meaning that Fitbit can still interface with other fitness apps that people use to try to share data as long as permission is there. So they haven't actually, so even though they've got the kind of speculative go-ahead from the European Commission, there's still a final hurdle, which involves consultation with consumers and competitors as to whether these concessions have gone far enough. And I'm really fascinated to see what's going to happen next. So, yeah, I mean, what the hell? What do you guys think? Are these concessions enough, or do they just seem a bit mealy-mouthed given the potential power that Google would have once they've got Fitbit into the family? And what are consumers and competitors going to say about this? Lindsay, I'm going to have to go to you first because Kieran's already got his head in his head. So we're going to have to brace ourselves for the 15-minute onslaught once we get to him.
Yeah, I mean, I find it that the whole thing is rather amusing. What these concessions that you just referred to, that the European Commission are allowing Google to kind of get, there's so much antitrust investigation going against Google at the moment. I'm so surprised that this is not being looked into in more detail. Really surprised that they're allowing a $2.1 billion merger to go through. The EU Commission haven't confirmed they definitely will say yes to it yet. And if consultation thing, I just find hilarious. Like, who are you going to ask? The man on the street? Like, yeah. I don't understand who's going to be included. Well, I know that they'll speak to competitors and speak to kind of other people in the industry as well, who will undoubtedly say, no, don't let it happen.
Exactly. This is shit.
But this is classic Google. Google don't build, they buy. And if they want, and that this will be their only way of getting into wearable tech, whereas the likes of Apple and Samsung have done really, really well. But ultimately, Google will want this for the data. And okay, they'll wait 10 years if they have to. Health data is so valuable. Like the data that Fitbit has access to about a human, it even like some Fitbit bands don't just register your steps. They register your heart rate. They register your sleep. They register your oxygen levels when you sleep to see if you've got sleep apnea. There's so much that data that Fitbit can have access to that could give Google so much information, more rounded information about a user to help its targeting capabilities, that would they happily wait 10 years if they're allowed to go through? They probably would do. But I think I read somewhere that this is referred to as, rather than platform development, is referred to as platform envelopment, and that is what Google's doing. But I think that from my perspective, you know, this allows the European Commission to really kind of take control here and show that their strong stance on anti-competition and enforcement in large-scale mergers like this. And I wonder if the mitigations and the concessions that they've agreed to so far just don't go far enough for a behemoth like Google.
Absolutely. I mean, you're right. It is a test case for them to show their power, but are they going far enough? It doesn't really feel like it. Ciaran, this is your wheelhouse now. Come on.
Strap yourselves in.
That's it.
I mean, what can you say? This is a fucking terrible decision. It is dumb, right? I actually despair. I genuinely despair at this, right? Google has done this so many times, right? They did it with DoubleClick, right? They promised the world, and then they used that tool, right, to basically get into a vertical market and overtake it, right? Now, why the hell would you let Google use its data and use an acquisition like Fitbit to enrich its data to get into a multi-billion dollar market and then have a built-in advantage to build another monopolistic sort of hold over a vertical industry? And this is so stupid, Hi. It's so stupid. It's myopic, it's moronic. And I think that the lobbyists that Google have in Europe have obviously swayed a lot of people there. It just feels to me that we can't even trust our own politicians to protect us from this company, right? I have no problem with Google. If Google built this from scratch, I have no problem. As Lindsay said, Google do not innovate. They do not innovate. They're not an innovator. They use their monopolistic power to buy companies and then they build up a monopoly off the back of it. This deal should not be allowed. It shouldn't be allowed. In fact, all M&A for those companies should be banned, right? They're already big enough. And it's just frustrating to see this. And I don't know what to say. We try very hard to shine a light on this. Google have immense power. And they are they're like a rabid animal, right? They can't help themselves. They have to grow. They're a multi-billion dollar company. They have to grow. And that's why you have to keep these in check. It feels to me the EU have learned nothing about the last 10, 20 years of how these companies use data as a tool to get into vertical markets, right?
Well, this is the thing, because, you know, Lindsay raises a really interesting point that what they're interested in is the health data. And we know that they've got a whole business, never mind advertising and all the rest of it, they've got a whole business in developing health-related products and doing a lot of scientific research into, you know, products that are designed to assist healthy aging and just all
sorts
of things.
You really want Google to have that data, right? Yeah. Do we really want after everything that's happened over the last 10 years, do you really want a company like Google to have access to that data? I would not be wearing a Fitbit or any other kind of hardware that's run by one of those companies. My feeling here is it's almost like they're getting a bridgehead for free, right? 1.2 billion is a steal
to them.
They get a bridgehead in. Google basically, you know, rips apart Fitbit, puts in Android, then puts it into all these sort of wearable tech that they can roll out. This is a bridgehead into a massive industry. And we can't let this happen, hey. I mean, I don't know what we can do about this, but this should be blocked. I mean, if I was a competitor, I'd say, no fucking way.
Well, but they're going to, right? Like invariably, I can't imagine any of the competitors coming out saying anything. Well, I mean, I guess it depends on who they speak to, right? So if they're just going to go to Apple and Samsung as the kind of nearest wearables competitor, then that might be different. But if they're actually going to go to the owners of those other apps that would be worried about data sharing and so forth, and if they're going to
this is the problem with governments, right? They don't see beyond the immediate market, right? We're not talking about wearable tech here. We're talking about the health industry, right?
I know.
And what the health industry should be doing now, they should be literally going, we have got to stop this deal, because if we let them into the hen house, they're going to eat all the hens, right? They're just basically going to control. It'll be like, oh yeah, concessions. Yeah, 10 years of ads, but we don't give a shit about ads, because Google doesn't need any more data. They've got loads of data. They control the ad market. They don't need any more market share.
For advertising,
what they want, what they want is they want that vertical market. Health is like 10x the size of marketing. It's huge, right? In a 400 million person market. We cannot allow these companies to keep doing this.
I just want to read a quote from a really good article I've been reading on VoxEU, which has obviously been put together by a bunch of economists that are looking at the intricacies of this. And then obviously, because they're not looking at it from an ad tech perspective, or they're looking at it from the data perspective. And just a summarising quote is, the acquisition of Fitbit is not just about one more gadget being brought into Google's ecosystem, but one involving high sensitive data that is likely to harm consumers in health insurance, medical services, and even labour markets, and protect Google's dominant position in demographic, interest, and location data. Blocking the merger does not solve all problems related to health data, but it avoids amplifying already existing problems. A bad merger with bad remedies remains a bad merger for society.
100%. Where is the European Commission in all of this, though, right? Like, Margaret Vestager, she cannot be enjoying this. Like, why isn't more opposition.
Yeah, it's this 10-year thing I just find so bizarre.
It's
like
a joke, right?
Either you allow Google to use the data, or you don't use it at all. Because like we just said, health data is so valuable, and it's so valuable beyond just kind of it, beyond Google protecting and building their data empire. It's so valuable in so many ways that they will wait 10 years to use it. They'll be happy to do that.
Like I said, like we've all said, they'll forego any advertising revenue off the back of that.
It's not about that. I don't think it's about the data that enriches their data set, right? It's not about that. It's about giving Google an industry that they don't have a leg in, right? They can't be allowed. You've got to be able to stop this, right? These vertical integrations are wrong, right? It's been like it's what happened in the early parts of the 1900s, where you had literally two or three companies that owned all the infrastructure, the train lines, oil companies. This is the same thing. We have got to stop this. We've got to stop these types of operations.
Also, what about, you know, what impact does it have on any of the other antitrust investigations that are going on within Europe? I mean, it feels as though if this is let to go ahead, doesn't it just make a mockery of all of those other investigations? And surely someone within the European Union would be really vexed about that. There's got to be people that are pissed off about that. Lindsay? Some final words from you?
I don't know what to add to that, really.
Just
you're talking about kind of just punching and kicking is the way that we can win this. I mean, just
biting, no, and scratching, biting.
I was talking metaphorically, Lindsay. I was talking like, look.
You didn't mean in person.
I thought there'd be you and Johnny Ryan, the other angry Irishman in ad tech. Just running up to Google's offices and
I agree with Johnny Ryan on this part. Johnny Ryan, in fairness, I'm saying that he sees these companies using data to get vertical integration, right? To get into vertical markets. And this is a classic example of that. And Johnny would agree with me on this, right? And the most depressing thing about this is Google or the EU doesn't see this. They cannot see what Google are doing here, right?
Or what is likely to be worse is that at least some of them can see exactly what's happening, but they're letting it happen anyway, in order to protect other political interests or other economic interests, which is very often what happens in these scenarios. But you will never get anyone to admit to that, and you will never actually get any true visibility into that unless you happen to be a politician yourself or you work in Brussels. So, you know.
Obviously, Google and Facebook are spending the most on lobbying in Brussels, right? And that's having an influence over local politicians.
He's given up and he's turned around.
Yeah, okay. That's good. Well, that puts an end to our conversation of news stories for the 100th episode of the Mad Tech Podcast. Definitely going to require some editing, this one. Thank you very much, Lindsay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Kieran. Oh, my God. You have to say something.
Good luck. Good luck.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Digital's dead. I'm going to space tech, where at least Google's not involved now. Oh, Amazon's there. Shit. I mean, I don't know.
Rosie. Right. Okay, good. And thanks very much to all of our, thanks very much to Rodney. We've said this a number of times, but he really does deserve thanks for putting up with us.
And thank you, Rodney.
Thanks, Rodney.
And thanks.
You're a true pro.
And also thanks very much to our very loyal subscribers and listeners who somehow keep coming back for more angry ranting.
They weren't after this one.
And that was this week's MadTech Podcast.